party, it's time to change. You're just getting started. You can teach an old dog new ways, and not just on Saturday.
Hey, you guys, it's Anna, David, with After Party Pod. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Love that you are. Welcome if you're new. It's a podcast all about addiction and recovery and occasionally mental illness, occasionally other things. Today, I have an amazing guest. We'll get to that in a second. This is a Saturday afternoon. I do not record these usually on the weekends because as a sort of confirmed workaholic, I have a bit of a deal with myself that I will not work on the weekends. It took me such a long time to get there. I don't know if you all relate to that, but literally, I remember the day that my mom called me on a Saturday and said, "What are you doing?" And I said something that wasn't working. And she said, "I am so proud of you." So, but this guest, I was so excited to have him that I was willing to do it because he is a comedian, but unlike most comedians, he actually is employed. And so he is not available during the work day. And so, we had to do it today, which is fine. Although I've sort of just behind the eight ball a little bit, I'm a somebody who sort of eyes pop open at 6:30, excuse me, or 7 in the morning. And it's unfortunate because it doesn't matter how late I go to sleep. That's just sort of what my body clock likes to do. And today my body clock decided to take a little bit of a breather. Got up at like 9 and have been hustling all day. I need that 2.5 hour situation to kind of get the stuff done. I have some concerns, by the way. I have a new neighbor who moved in and I have some concerns that she does not understand. It's not that she's loud. It's that she doesn't understand what loudness is. And there's a difference because she hasn't done something that's particularly loud, but there's just this general vibe. It's like lots of windows open and lots of electronics on, and I'm hearing her, and she's definitely got a different hours that she keeps than me, and it's waking me up, and I have some concerns. And, you know, this might be alcoholic thinking. I love my apartment more than I've ever loved any place I've ever lived, including the beautiful home I grew up in. And I literally am just like, I have to move. Where am I going to move? I get rent. So I mean, it's immediately where I go rather than I'll get a louder sound machine. My new concept today is I'm going to actually just move my bed across the room. But anyway, I know that you guys downloaded this podcast so that you could hear about this. So I'm so sorry, but I do have to move on. What else do I want to tell you? I am launching a new podcast. I've been mentioning it lately. I'm not ready to say the name. Maybe I am. A couple of you, and when I say a couple, I mean, I think 10 to 15 people who have sent me emails over the years telling me that they like this podcast. I emailed all of those people. I picked like the 10 nicest emails. I'm going to be nice. Maybe it was 15. I don't remember. And I emailed them and I said, "I'm starting this new podcast. Would you give it a listen and let me know your thoughts?" And I got some amazing notes from those people and have incorporated it. And I'm going to be releasing this new one with a bang. I'm going to release 3 up front, just put it out there. I already have a website up. God, maybe I should just tell you that you can't go get it yet, but it's called You've Got Issues with Anna David. And the website, which doesn't have much on it yet, is Issues with Anna. Anyway, we'll talk about that another time. If you would like to know about that podcast, which has all sorts of bells and whistles and other things, please go sign up for my newsletter, which is annadavidnewsletter.com, and you will be the first to be notified about this. But really what we're here talking about is After Party. After Party Pod is a part of After Party Magazine, which is a magazine all about addiction and recovery. We are part of rehabreviews.com. If you are looking for treatment, we have more reviews of rehabs than any other publication in the world. We post 10 new ones a day. Rehabs that are, you know, we have a rehab that's $100,000 a month, and we have plenty of rehabs listed that are free. So if you are looking for that for yourself or someone else, that is the place to go. You can find us all over the interwebs. You can follow, get information about this podcast and After Party Magazine on Twitter at After Party Site. You can find us on Facebook at the After Party Group. And we're on Instagram, all this stuff. Just go to After Party Magazine. You'll get all this info. And now I'm going to talk about today's guest. He is a actor and comedian who writes on, Hollywood Game Night with Jane Lynch. And now he's writing on, now I've already forgotten the name, but it's Craig Ferguson has a very similar show we get to the name on the episode, but he also performs all over, and he has a very popular show at the Improv here in LA where big comedians come and sort of, as they say, work out their material, like Dimitri Martin and other Maria Bamford and all these other people. And he performs at the Comedy Store, West Side Comedy Theater, all over the place. And he also has been performing at the storytelling show, The Moth. And he was in the After Party storytelling show. We talk a lot about that in this episode, so I am not going to dwell on that here. His name is Bill Dixon. He's got, I'm going to say, the craziest story yet. To ever appear on this show. I knew it already because it's a story he told at this last show, but it is dark and intense, and you will be amazed he came out of it as well as he did. It's the guy's an inspiration. So here I'm going to give you Bill Dixon.
I first started taking drugs by chewing blocks of hash.
Oh my God, I think my copy has like blood stains on it from shooting up while reading it.
Party animal, I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the, as right. I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere.
I'm very lucky because would you have wanted to have a celebrity junkie for a dad?
So, Bill, thank you for doing this.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I am excited to have you here because I got to know you in a kind of strange way in that I did not know you, reached out to you to do the show, heard a very intimate story.
Yes.
So we have never spoken except to be part of performance.
Yes.
Which is the way it should be. I mean, who needs
I agree.
Conversation?
It's disgusting.
It's so boring.
I know.
And pointless.
I don't know why we do it.
No. I might stop after this.
Yeah. I'm going to get going. This was fun. Thank you.
No, this counts because people are going to be listening, so it matters.
Okay.
Do you remember in Truth or Dare when Madonna, Warren Beatty says to Madonna, you don't even want to exist unless you're on camera?
I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, my God. Well, you are male.
Oh, my God. Yes, I'm male.
I think. And you're not, you're not a Madonna aficionado of sorts.
I wouldn't say an aficionado. I'm familiar with her body of work.
Right. You're not, you wouldn't even say a fan, clearly, because you didn't use that word.
No, I don't think a fan. No, here's the thing. When Like a Virgin comes on, mm-hmm. I get down.
Okay. That sounds like a fan, frankly.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't seek it out.
No.
It's like a nice little surprise when it happens. It's like candy corn. It's like you don't really seek out candy corn.
No,
but when it's presented to you, you go, oh, wow, candy corn.
Yeah.
And you put it in your mouth, and then you realize you don't like candy corn.
Speak for yourself. My favorite food is peanut butter.
Just across the board, that's your favorite food?
Mm-hmm.
It's not really...
A food?
I don't know. It's like it straddles the line between condiment and food.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's on a thing, but you just go.
Oh, you can eat it out of a jar. Don't be silly.
So you just go straight spoon and jar.
I don't, but you could.
Oh, totally.
I mean,
you could also, you know.
Do that with mayonnaise.
Drive your car through the window of a McDonald's if you want to. You can do anything you want to in this life.
I believe there are people... We should focus a little. So I apologize for this diversion so early on. But if you've ever had the...
let's get back to Madonna.
The chocolate and peanut butter mix from Whole Foods.
I have not.
Oh, Bill, you have not seen Truth or Dare.
I know.
You've never had the chocolate and peanut butter mix. Like,
should I start a list? I need a pen and paper.
I'm just wondering what you've been doing with your time.
Apparently wasting my life.
Apparently so. But here's my segue. You have not been wasting your life because you're sober.
Yes.
Do you like that?
That was seamless.
How long are you sober?
7 years and some odd months.
Mm-hmm. 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 And what I do not know is sort of the story of your addiction.
The story of my addiction.
Well, I would love to start with the story that you told
yeah.
At the show, not telling it as a story.
Okay.
Not, you know,
Yeah.
But so let's tell the listeners about, first of all, how your parents met.
Oh, my parents met in rehab, mm-hmm. which is super fun and exciting.
Romantic.
And yeah, totally romantic. And so naturally, I'm an addict as well and a comedian, mm-hmm. Because you have to be. So they met in rehab, then they had me the next year. And then when I was 5, my dad left. And then when I was 12, my mom killed herself. And then I went into rehab when I was, well, I became an addict, mm-hmm. as people who are products of rehab people tends to be.
Right. Or do you think you were born an addict? Do you think you became an addict?
Oh, sure. But just my DNA
really
fucked me.
Yeah. I hear you.
Also situationally, just growing up like that. All the things kind of conspired
to make you somebody who could put your butt in a church basement seat.
Right. Totally.
Essentially.
Absolutely.
Well, where were you growing up?
I was born in Queens, New York. And then after my dad disappeared, me and my mom kind of bounced around for a while. She was manic depressive, bipolar. She didn't have more than a year sober at any given point. So we did a lot of bouncing around mm-hmm. places, and I kind of ended up in the general Philadelphia area. Mm-hmm. So did most of my growing up there. Then after my mom passed away, I stayed in the Philadelphia area with a stepdad and a step grandmother. And then I bounced around between different friends' houses, and it was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot. But yeah. And then when I was 23, I went into rehab because I was crazy.
And how do you think you turned out so well?
Wow. Thank you.
Oh, please.
Number one.
Come on.
I turned out so well. I don't know.
I mean,
I don't feel like that.
Given your history, you don't feel like that.
It's hard. It's hard to ever feel like that about yourself, don't you think? Do you feel like you're wonderful? How do you feel about yourself?
Well, no, I would never say I feel like I'm wonderful, but I would absolutely say I feel like I turned out quite well.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I have difficulty giving myself credit
for
that kind of stuff. It feels indulgent or something.
Right,
I don't know.
Right, right. Well, so I don't know how much I can sort of poke at your childhood.
Poke.
Really?
Poke away.
Okay, okay.
Listen, we already got into Madonna.
Right.
And we already got into peanut butter. We really went into the deep stuff. So just dive in.
No, but so how aware were you of your mother's mental illness when you were growing up?
Imagine growing up on a sailboat, only you're always in a storm. Mm-hmm. It was normal, but at the same time, you're like, this isn't great. It was my baseline existence, that kind of madness. And it wasn't until I was about maybe 9 or 10 that I started seeing other people and how their lives were that I really became cognizant of the fact that this was very dysfunctional,
right,
the way I was growing up. My mother's kind of arc or trajectory was kind of like, what she would do is she would get sober for about 6 months, and then she would relapse in such a fashion where she would either disappear, where it would just be like she wouldn't pick us up from school. I have a little brother. Mm-hmm. Either she would just disappear for a few months at a time, or she would relapse in the house, and that would mean her getting blackout drunk, passed out on the couch, shitting, pissing on herself, and then only getting up to drink more, and then to resume her position back on the couch. And it was chaotic in a way that I find most alcoholics aren't.
Yeah.
There would be no sober period in that. She would be permanently
around the clock,
not even wait, like can't feed herself, can't feed me. So it was very aggressive, her addiction, and in a way that that's commonly associated more with almost like heroin addiction,
right?
More than alcoholism, I find. So that was kind of that was the life for a while, and then I'd watch TV and you'd see sitcoms and stuff like that, and I assumed that was all fabricated, and it is.
Yeah.
But
you assumed it was far more fabricated than it was.
Right. I was like, this is hysterical.
Right.
Like, what are all these? Like watching Full House, but like, yeah, right. Look at all these dads.
Right.
Never seen so many dads before. But then when I was about 9 or 10 years old, you know, I started kind of understanding that other people had families who weren't like this and didn't function like this. And because she would disappear, I would be heartbroken and terrified and scared. But after this happened for years and years and years and it became normal, I was very much hardened to it by the time I was about 10 years old. Or it got to the point where she would disappear and I'd be like, no, this is normal. This is, I may or may not see her again. She'll materialize a few states away, in a hospital. And then
somebody, a doctor calls you. Is that what would happen?
Yeah. So she would come back from these long runs and she'd apologize. And she'd always say, I'll never do it again.
Right.
I'll never do it, which is the worst thing
a
person in that position could say. But at the point, I was like, you know, don't worry about it. I don't assume you're ever going to be okay. And, you know, I'm okay with it. This is something I came to at 10 years old. And saying this to her must have broke her heart in a way that I can't even begin to imagine. And then a couple years after that, she overdosed on a bunch of prescription pills and she had relapsed and then she took all the pills. And then that was it. And it was honestly a huge fucking relief.
Really?
Yeah. As terrible as that. And I struggled with that for a long time. Feeling happy. I was happy with it in the same way. It was like the war was over, but I lost the war.
Right. But you know, at least the war was over.
At least the war is over. So after that, things leveled out and my life became dramatic. Because, I mean, it just wasn't as chaotic. After my mom died, I ended up living with a friend for 3 years, but then I was thrust into a situation where, you know, there was a family who had dinner at a regular time and they asked me about my day and my homework.
Right.
They were aware that I had homework, which is completely novel to me at this point.
Right.
So that was good.
And you liked that family?
I did. But at the same time, it was like, they were the family.
Yeah.
I was the guy living at the house. They did their best to incorporate me, but at the same time, it's, you know.
What about your little brother?
My little brother at that point moved in with, he was about 3, and he was living with my step-grandmother, so we were split up.
Mm-hmm.
And he was happy with that situation. I was happy with my situation, and we saw each other a lot. But
are you close today?
Not so much. My brother, surprise, also became a drug addict.
Did he have the same dad? No.
Nope, we had different dads.
Yeah.
So he is. He's been in and out of rehab and dealing with heroin and other stuff, and he's. I don't know. He's in a tough position right now, but I don't want to speak about him so much if he doesn't want me to.
And did you get sober the first time out of rehab?
Yes. I went into rehab, and I think what happened was we were sitting, a guy came in to talk at the rehab, and he started talking about numbers, and he said something like, you know, 90% of the people in this room won't stay sober a year. And I thought, I'm absolutely going to be one of those people. I have to be one of those people. And also for me, my addiction manifested in the same way that my mother's did, where, you know, I feel like on this, I do believe that addiction, there's a spectrum. There's people who are just more active than others. And I was on the far end of that. I drank. That was my addiction. That's how my addiction manifested most of the time. So, but when I would drink like my mother. I would drink until I blacked out. I would resume consciousness and I would find wherever I hid the bottle and I would continue drinking until I blacked out again. And this was the process for months. Mm-hmm. And there was whole spans of my 20s that I don't remember. I remember I regained consciousness once and I had been dating somebody. I was like, I literally don't recognize you.
How long did you don't been know. Dating?
I think only a few weeks, but this person comes over to my apartment and she has like food. And I'm like, I don't know what you're doing here.
Shut up.
I swear to God.
Felt
I have
like
no
you've never seen her.
Idea. She looked familiar. I had no idea who she was to me or, and she came over and I she hung out for a little bit and she's like, are you okay? You're acting super weird.
Cause you were just not drunk for the first time or you
right.
were drunk.
I was kind of drunk.
Right. Right.
I was just kind of drunk.
Right.
For the first time in weeks. So this is the person I'd been dating. It wasn't like a full on relationship, yeah. but I'd been dating somebody.
Well, I mean, no offense, but what's wrong with her that she's not noticing?
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I would assume she was probably in a similar situation yeah, I was in.
But a little bit less severe.
Yeah, maybe.
The way to your house.
I don't know. I think depends on what your definition of severity is, because she obviously was not in a great position.
Right.
But because of that, because I was such a manic, crazy alcoholic, I feel blessed in a way. Where it's such a clear binary of this is what I am when I'm sober and this is what I am when I'm drunk. The drunk version of me is incapable of doing anything.
Right.
Not holding a job. Functioning alcoholic, whatever that means. I couldn't do whatever that was at all on any level.
Right.
So it was clear to me that it's like, oh, if I drank, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Because I just can't. I can't do anything when I'm lost in that.
Right.
And I have, you know, I think we all know people who, this is what's truly devastating in my opinion is people, not the people who fall off the edge immediately, which is sad and tragic, but the people whose lives come apart bit by bit over the course of 30 years. And it's just picking and picking and picking. And it's like, they go, oh, just a few too many drinks.
Right.
And then that continues. And then it's like, oh, a few missed opportunities here, up oh, a divorce here, up. Oh. And then at the end, and then, you know, at 65, they're sitting, oh, what happened to this life I could have had? And it's just 60% less than they had hoped for. Right. And they're just at the end of their life going, God, maybe I should get sober.
Yeah. Or more commonly, probably not even having that awareness.
Right.
That they missed 60% of the life that they wanted to have.
Right.
You know, I do think about that too, because the quote, you know, high functioning alcoholic. I mean, I do know what that is. That's like the people that are out there being lawyers and, you know, their lives are unmanageable. And,
right.
You know, but they're managing. Mm-hmm. And I was not one of those either. And I see them struggle and I see them go like, oh, you know, whatever the need to do the work or to stay sober doesn't feel as urgent.
Right.
Because, you know, they're functioning, they're paying mortgages, they were doing these things I didn't know, I know I couldn't do.
Right.
And that's a blessing.
Were you a totally bananas person?
No, I mean, yeah, it really does depend on your definition of totally bananas and severity, and they're often defined together.
You right.
know? Totally bananas. Yeah. No one's ever asked me that, even though my nickname has been Banana. As an aside, I recently went to a party. This is a serious aside. This makes peanut butter look so relevant.
I'm so excited for whatever you're going to say now, because banana was the pivot point. Go for it.
I went to a party, where a ridiculous party, where you had to put a name tag on that was not your name, but either your nickname or something you wanted more of in your life. Okay, so I put banana. I don't like bananas. So I was walking around looking like I wanted more bananas in my life. Yeah. The look on your face is priceless.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
It's just like, how could someone have experienced this is what your look on your face is saying. So then I told my friend couldn't think of a name, and I said, oh, put Beyonce. That's what you want more of in your life. And so, I mean, which is, by the way, the smartest thing I've ever thought of.
Right.
And then I became Jay-Z. That's my entire story. That was my name.
Okay, wait. How were you Jay-Z if you had banana on your shirt?
I changed it.
You changed it from banana to Jay-Z?
Yeah, I wrote a new one. It was a name tag.
Why? So you abandoned banana.
Yeah.
You started something and didn't finish it.
I don't like bananas.
Then why did you start with banana?
Because that's my nickname. It's really not, but it's like I have been called that. It's as close as
quick
I can
come
to a nickname.
Yeah. How did you get the nickname banana?
My name is Anna.
Well, that's not...
That is such a normal nickname.
Right, well, your nickname's Anna Banana, not Banana.
I have been called Banana. I know. It's not, I'm not a nickname person. Are you a nickname person?
I'd rather die. Here's the thing. You're a Jay-Z from now on. That's what I'm calling you for the rest
that's
of the
show. Fine. I'd love to be Jay-Z, frankly.
No, wouldn't we all?
So nobody's ever called you Billy?
Grandma's calling Billy. Uh-huh. I'm Billy to a grandma's. Mm-hmm. I'm Bill to... people in everyday life. And I dated a girl in Chicago.
She called you William.
She called me Will. She was like, this is a cooler name. And she was a hairdresser. She's like, I'm going to call you Will. I'm like, all right.
That's kind of interesting. I mean, it's kind of fun to have a name that can be so many names.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, I don't feel like a Bill. I'm named after my grandfather. Everyone named Bill is named after the grandfather, by the way. I feel like my name is Bill Dixon. And I feel like, it sounds like a insurance broker in Youngstown, Ohio. I just don't feel like a comedian with the name.
Yeah, but it certainly hasn't been holding you back.
Bill Dixon. No, it hasn't, I guess. I feel like I want something more exotic, like, I don't know, Jay-Z Banana or something.
But I mean, you could change. It's a little late now because you got a big career and stuff like that. But you could have done something back in the day.
Right.
The last guest on my podcast was named Bucky Sinister. He wasn't born with that name.
You're kidding me.
I'm not
Bucky
kidding.
Sinister wasn't born Bucky Sinister?
Oh, I thought you meant by him going through that now. You know, there are crazier names that parents have given. Anyway, segue back to, let's go back a little bit to, Philadelphia. This was my question for you. I'm getting serious again.
Yeah.
When you would see your mother drinking, did you go, I'm never going to be like that?
I was terrified I would be. And then somewhere around age 13 or 14, you know, you just go, fuck it. I don't care. And then you decide you're going to drive the car off the cliff. You go, I'm not going to be afraid of this thing.
Right.
I'm going to be different. Or I'm going to blow up. Who gives a fuck?
Right.
And so I just kind of leaned into it and started drinking. And I really liked it.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I was, you know, I was super fun for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And that turned into, you know, here's the thing. Around college age, I feel like everyone drinks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're just kind of following that trajectory. Mm-hmm. And then some around age 22, people kind of stop.
So annoying.
Or like falls off a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just kept climbing. Just kept going for it.
Yeah, you remember that? And you're like, why did my friends just get so boring?
I know. Like, what is going on with you guys? Like,
yeah.
Chill out.
But did you go to college?
I did. I went to a few things.
Uh huh.
And
things meaning colleges or meaning?
Yeah, I went to Art Institute. I went to a community college.
Uh-huh.
But you can't really do a lot when you're incapacitated.
No. Well,
you can't get a lot done.
You can't get a lot done. And obviously, you are putting yourself through school, which is harder than not putting yourself through school.
It's very true.
I'm really smart.
Yeah.
That's why I came to
Hey, listen, you don't end up with the nickname Banana for being a dummy.
So you, I'd love to go into the story about your dad.
Okay.
So I know the story.
Do you want me to just tell the story?
You wanted to just tell the story.
I'll just tell the story.
Okay.
I'm going to tell it in a not storyteller way. So after I got sober, I moved to Chicago because I was going to start my career as a comedian. And when I got there, I had to take a job working in a real estate company.
How perfect for a name like Bill Dixon. Right?
That's why they hired me. They're like, what, you're white, you have khakis, and your name's Bill Dixon? You work here. You've worked here for years. So I got this job, and I was working one day, and I was on Facebook, and I don't know why I decided to do it, but I typed my biological father's name into the Facebook search bar, and then he popped up. Because he's a guy on Facebook.
Yep.
Because everyone's just a guy on Facebook.
Yep.
And so I click on my dad's, I think it's my dad's Facebook profile, and I'm looking at it, and I don't know what to do, because I hadn't thought about actually doing this. And it was like an impulsive decision to even put his name in. But so I'm looking at this guy's profile. He looks just like me. I don't know what to do. What I don't want to do is I don't want to send him a message and go, hey, where the fuck have you been my whole life? Right. Yeah, you're my dad, and I needed you. And have him be like, I don't know who this person is. And I just like ruined somebody's week.
Were you positive it was him?
I wasn't sure. I was pretty sure, but I wasn't sure enough to ruin somebody's week. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because if it wasn't my dad, then that's like a terrible.
Or ruin their life, because then they think that the rest of their life.
They just
life,
think they have a son.
Be.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So I didn't want to do that. So what I did do was I went through this guy's Facebook friends and found people with the same last name. And I messaged a woman named Margarita. And I said, hi, this is Bill. You probably don't know who I am, but you're friends with this guy named Martin on Facebook. I wonder if maybe he fell in love with a woman in rehab around 1983, and then they had a kid together, and then maybe he disappeared. Anyway, I hope you're having a nice week. Write me back. Here's my phone number. And then 5 minutes later, I got a phone call, and it's the woman,
Margarita,
going, Billy, this is your Aunt Margarita. I remember dancing salsa with you in the living room. I'm half Puerto Rican.
And you didn't know that.
I did know that, but I didn't know how Puerto Rican. It's like knowing you're half Irish and then calling somebody and them going, oh, it's me, Lucky Charms. You're like, oh no, this is super.
Well, half is half.
Half is half.
Yeah. It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's yeah. As far as percentages go, yeah. It's almost more than half. Mm-hmm. But I was still taken aback because I wasn't expecting them to be that Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. Which sounds racist. I can say it because I'm Puerto Rican.
You can say whatever you want.
I can say whatever I want.
You don't. Can I say you don't look Puerto Rican at all? Is that racist?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess so. Or maybe not. I don't know. Puerto Ricans don't even. They're kind of whitish.
Right.
Sometimes. Anyway, so I'm on the phone with this woman, and she says, you know, your dad lives in Puerto Rico now. And I was like, cool. She's like telling me, like, dancing salsa with me in the living room when I was a kid. And I was like, you know, whatever. You ever think to, like, look for me at all? And she goes, I swear to God, she says, you know, your photo still hangs in your grandmama's house. And every time we walk past it, we always go, whatever happened to him? Crazy. Whatever happened to him?
So crazy.
Like, you know how you feel when you see like a Pauly Shore VHS like somewhere in your house? You go, whatever happened? Like, yeah. That's how my family feels about me. They're like, whatever happened to him? And so I was like, so taken aback, and I didn't know what to do at that point in terms of like if I wanted to reach out to my dad or not. And I said, I told Margarita, I go, look, I don't know what I want to do. Just please don't tell my dad I was looking for him, and I just want to take some time with this. She said, sure. Hung up the phone. 5 minutes after that, my Facebook notifications start going off, and my biological father has been taking photos from my photo album on Facebook and has started his own album called People I Care About Very Much. Hasn't talked to me yet. No friend request, by the way. Yeah. Just People I Care About Very Much. And
it's only you in it.
It's only me. And it's a bunch of captions that say, my little William doing this, my Billy doing this, my Billy doing that. Hasn't talked to me in 20 years. And then I get a message from him, and it says, the first message he sends to me after 20 years is, love the pics, would love to see more. Didn't spell out the word pictures, which is fine. And I got so angry, you know? I got angry. I got angry that he's so, love the pics, you know? Oh, whatever happened to him?
Nice.
Just this kind of, oh, weird. Interesting to run into you here. You know, after everything I'd been through, after he disappears and my lunatic mother, you know, drags me from town to town and she kills herself. And then I have to deal with my own shit. Then I have to go through rehab and I have to go at this thing alone. I have to, you know, have some adult man that I've met a half dozen times show me how to tie a tie before my senior prom because I don't have a dad. And I think about all this and I get very angry because fuck you. And so I write him back and I really just let go. I unleash. I say all the things I wanted to say for years. Like especially with, you know, the Facebook stuff. It's like, how dare you walk into my life, take responsibility for a thing you didn't help build.
Right.
You know, I learned how to tie a tie on my own. I learned how to change a tire. You know, I've kissed a girl and I did that without your counsel and I don't need it now. And don't you dare take responsibility for me in any way. And, fuck you. And you're a piece of shit and you're a real fucking loser. And, I hope you've lived a life free the burden of child support. I hope that was fun for you. And P.S. Mom is dead. And then I hit send. Mm. And that felt good for a little while, for like an hour. And a few hours go by. And then that anger starts to dissipate. And you're kind of left with yourself and your decisions. And then I started to worry that maybe that was impulsive. That in the same way he was impulsive and left me, in the same way my mom was impulsive and killed herself, this guy reached out and I shit all over him. And I got nervous about maybe this is just my addiction manifesting and in other ways. And that's the thing, we all deal with. Just, mm-hmm. you know, just because you stop whatever drug it is you're doing or whatever thing it is you're drinking, you're still an addict.
Yeah.
I'm still a fucking addict.
Yeah.
My stomach feels messed up today because I ate all the Thai food last night.
In the world?
I should have stopped. And I ate all the Thai food last night.
What is all the Thai food?
All of it.
In Los Angeles?
There's no more left. I'm sorry.
I saw some today.
And everyone, you didn't see any today. It was a lie. It was a fabrication. Someone lied to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, these are all the things that we like continually deal with. It's whack-a-mole. It's like fucking chocolate cake. It's porn. It's sex. It's whatever the thing is in front of you. So I'm thinking about...
And anger.
And whatever thing feels good. Anger is a great one. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's the thing I latched onto in that moment. Because there's like nothing better than being angry. I get to climb on a soapbox. I get to be better than people.
Does it still feel that good?
It's like itching poison ivy scratch. It's like right when it's happening, it's like there's nothing better than this thing. And then it stops and you're like, this just exacerbated an already bad situation.
See, I don't feel like that.
Really?
No. I mean, I was the angriest person ever before I got sober. And
can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Do you think it's because your nickname was Banana?
I never connected those dots.
Well, that's why I'm here.
My God. Here I thought I was interviewing you, but really this is about bringing me to the point where I understand my entire life.
Yeah.
No, I think I was just, I was born angry. You know, my dad was really angry. And so it was both, you know, genetic and conditioned, I think. Like, I saw that that was okay, apparently, to get really angry at people.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for me, I also, you know, I'm on a medication that helps a lot with that.
Yeah.
And then getting sober. And so now anger feels terrible. I feel such shame the second I get angry.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good, because it can often stop me in my tracks, but it also still feels bad. Even just the tiniest glimpse of it, right. You know?
Also, you're allowed to be angry sometimes.
Yeah, you are, but I, you know, I think it's a little bit like cocaine. I can't afford it, because I don't, because it feels so bad, and yeah. I think I do it inappropriately. Not that there's it's not a great analogy. It's not like there's an appropriate.
Are you like a cocaine. Are you a window smasher? Are you a hurler of things at windows?
I've never pushed even anybody in my life.
Oh wow!
All but like brilliant verbal,
right?
Like just annihilation.
Cutting. Just
oh god!
Just it, fuck scorched earth tactics.
Yeah, I mean it's I'm so skilled at it that it's really dangerous.
Yeah,
but I really don't do it anymore. But anyway, so back to it felt good and then it felt bad.
Yeah, and then it felt good and then it felt bad, and then I kind of dwelled in that for a few weeks, and then I got a phone call from my cousin who I've never met before on my dad's side of the family. And this is a person I hadn't talked to, but I was reconnected with through Margarita. And she's about my age. And she says, do you know why your dad lives in Puerto Rico? And I say, no, I don't. And she tells me, she goes, you know, your dad molested me when I was 2 years old. And so he left. And that helped me to a certain degree, as terrible and horrifying as that is. It helped me realize that I'm not him.
Right.
And that is very, very important, because you know, if you're an addict who's come from addicts, you spend your entire life fleeing from the idea of ever being them. And, you're not. We're not. Right. We look like them. Sometimes we talk like them, but we are our own person with our own history. And it helped me realize that who I am is much more than the DNA right. That's in my body. And as terrible as some parts of my childhood were, it has crafted me into, as the oldest cliche, but it's made me the man that I am. And, you know, and that, as terrible as what he did was, it helped me realize that I'm not him, and that, you know, he did, the one lesson he did end up teaching me at the end of the day was that I was my own person. And so I'm grateful to him for that. He never wrote me back. I have a kind of Margarita will reach out from time to time, and other people on that side of the family. But yeah, I never heard from him, and that's okay.
Right.
You know, that's not, he was never my dad. He's my father. He was never my dad.
Right.
So he's a guy who brought me into this world, and then he after that he kind of disappeared. So can't do much.
There's no good way to bring it back to the fantastic line from the show that you haven't.
It just
won't work. It won't work. It won't land now.
No, it won't.
But I will say, you're still hearing about it from people.
Oh, I do. Should I just say it?
I'm concerned that the way I brought it back isn't going to work, but try it.
Yeah. Okay. So in the show version, what I say is, you know, my dad taught me that I'm not him because I would never do that to a kid. That being said, maybe I just haven't met the right toddler yet, and that's very possible. And see, folks who perform, that gets a huge fucking laugh in a very somber part of a story. And it feels very forced in this moment.
It does, but it's still, and it's all my fault. But it made me, as the person running the show, I got so tense, you know, because I'm just like, oh God, how is this going to land? You know, and yeah. I sort of, and then just immediate, because it's the relief.
Yeah.
The holy shit, that's a risky line.
Yeah.
And it worked, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm still.
And it works that. Like 80% of the time.
Yeah, but that's
when it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It lands tough. I'm digging back out, but it's okay because it's for me.
Yeah.
It's my story and it's very funny for me. I did the Moth storytelling show and I had that line in the story and they're like, oh no, you can't say that.
Oh, you do because you tell them the story ahead of time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get that.
Oh, you cut it? Or you
anyway? for the they asked for, right. Okay, they're like, can you please just not do that? I'm like, that's fine.
Right.
That's okay.
Right. You did the Moth here in LA?
Yeah. And I'll be in Des Moines. Oh, when does this come out?
Realistically, 3 weeks.
Okay.
Will you have been in Des Moines already?
I think.
Doing a Moth thing?
Yeah. If this is out before April 13th, which it probably won't be.
Yeah. Is that, and so I didn't realize, so does Dan Kennedy, does he do that? Does he travel around with the Moth? He's just a guy. We follow each other on Twitter. It doesn't matter. But so you're doing Moth stuff around.
Yeah.
I kind of just thought it was in LA and New York. I didn't even know.
Mm-mm, it's all over.
But I should say, because I've never talked about in this podcast, this show we keep referencing is After Party has a storytelling show. And if you live in Los Angeles and you have not been, I'm not really sure what your problem is because it's so good.
It's so incredible.
It was really great. It's the third Friday of every month at a place called Open Space Cafe, which is in West Hollywood. That's West Hollywood, not Hollywood. And it's right next to Cantor's, iconic Cantor's. And we have three people who've written stories for the site who tell the story version, and then we get special guests, and Bill was a special guest.
It's such a good show.
It was really good. The crazy thing about that show is it keeps getting better and better, and I had a storytelling show for years, and that was not the case.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's a really good show.
It's a really great venue that's not too big a room, and we keep filling it, and that's a huge... That's the hardest thing about performing, don't you think, is worrying about the crowd?
Always.
And not even the crowd, the size of the crowd for me.
Yeah. But it was a great crowd. And it's all people who are very in this world that we're talking in right now. And all very, very cool people.
And very new to the world for the most part.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because a couple rehabs bring their people.
Oh, wow.
So, you know.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And so literally they'll come up afterwards and just go, I had no idea sobriety could be funny. I didn't know you could laugh at yourself. This is so eye-opening.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
We're doing God's work is what my point is.
You really are, Banana.
Banana Jay-Z. One thing I did want to touch on, because you said before we started that, like, you I know this. I was just feeling uncomfortable, interested, but like you were a drinker, but you did NA.
Yeah.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, and that is like when I first got sober. There was a lot in like Chapter of the Agnostic and AA, and just some of the stuff that didn't jive with me as well. Being an atheist, and also I liked the idea of. My problem, I didn't feel like my problem was alcohol. My problem was my addiction. And it just, the language was a little different and a little broader, which was helpful for me in helping resolve other, because it wasn't just about alcohol. It wasn't, my problem isn't when I drank, my problem is me. Mm-hmm. This is the thing in my brain. And I don't think alcohol is evil. And I don't think that it just doesn't jive with, but just like the Thai food last night didn't jive with me. Mm-hmm. It's like, I regret that decision. It's not. It's certainly not as bad as, you know, drinking a handle of rum or whatever. But for me, and it was also this group of people that I met right in rehab that just transitioned me into that. And And also, I you know, had done coke and pills and everything else. And,
right.
And so the community in the area that I was in, also a little more my age bracket in just the Pennsylvania area. It's just what I landed into. Mm-hmm. But frankly, it's wherever you are, it's better than out there. So yes. It's not like I don't want to be disparaging at all. I'm back in AA right now. Actually, I have an AA sponsor and working the steps of AA just because in Los Angeles, it's kind of like, it's really interesting wherever you are in the country, how different meetings can be.
It is.
And different, whatever your fellowship is. It's so interesting and so funny. Like I've been to AA meetings in Wisconsin where they're just like, listen, I don't care what they say. Jesus is my Lord and Savior. And everyone starts applauding. I'm like, all right. It's just fine. It's very funny.
Well, and the general demeanor, too. I've been to meetings in London and in New Zealand. And, man, it's depressing.
Really?
Well, the weather was bad.
Yeah.
I'm very influenced by the weather. And, I just got a really nice email from a New Zealand listener to shout out to him.
Holla.
So he seems very happy with it all. But I just, my perception, having sort of like, quote, grown up in AA in LA, was that it was just very much like, I don't try accents because you wouldn't know what I was doing. But like, so I'm not even going to try. But the vibe just sort of being like, well, life sucks, but it sucked a little more before. That was sort of, there wasn't a lot of joy in the meetings that I went to.
I find LA, as a person who sampled across the country meetings, find LA's a little performative.
A little bit, probably.
Yeah, which is fun, though. People are like really, because it's full of actors and comedians and...
Yeah.
And, it's just different.
It is. I mean, I will admit that the shares are real perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I share, I just really try. I make an app, like, in the same way that we're having this conversation right now, and I just told you a story that I have a story about.
Yes.
And trying to make it not that story.
Right.
Because it's got too much polish on it. And you can smell the polish on it.
Right.
And it feels contrived sometimes, especially since you've heard the story before.
No, right.
And I feel very weird
landing
jokes in front of you that are like, like, this is... You know,
I was so aware of that too, but I felt as the person sitting here that I could both be me experiencing it, and then I try to always think of the listener, and I'm like, I don't know, if I was just hearing that, I would think that just rolled off his tongue. I really, except for the whole thing where I made you say the line,
that was
a little obvious.
Really fun,
but yeah, it is hard, you know, to being authentic. It's taken me, I think, many, many years in recovery to like not plan the shares.
Right. I do that. I still do that.
Yeah.
I still do that. Like somebody says something and like in the back of my head, sometimes I'm just going,
clock that.
Yeah.
Remember that.
Remember that.
Yeah.
I'm going to bounce off that. I'm going to do this and I'll heighten here and I'm building a story. I'm a writer.
Yeah.
This is what I'm doing in my head. And a lot of times, and for those listeners who maybe go through that, just put your fucking hand up and...
So what? Yeah,
say,
exactly.
But what I like to do is if I feel like I'm in that space, I make sure to not write anymore in my head, and I just put my hand up.
Yeah.
And say the thing.
Yeah.
Just so then I can purge myself of my ego and hopefully be able to share something that's real and sincere, but then also be able to listen.
Yeah.
Because when you're writing in your head and you're planning your... The thing you're going to say, what you're not doing is listening.
Right.
What you are doing is constructing some kind of thing to serve your ego.
Right.
A lot of times.
Right.
At least that's what I do. I'm very guilty of that.
Yeah. No, me too. It's interesting because I haven't thought about this in a long time. That used to sort of rule me, and I would say I'm quote unquote better. Like, I don't actually. Like, now I'm just talking. But yesterday, and I mean, this is so embarrassing.
Right.
Yesterday in a meeting, there was a speaker. And then I shared later, like, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I really thought I got something deep. Like, I really, and there were nods. And I was like, everybody gets that I just threw out some deep,
crushing
shit. Like, and then the guy who shared after me talked about
how much he'd gotten out of the meeting because of the speaker. And I was actually mad.
Totally.
Like, I was just like, well, I don't understand. Like, he's just pretending I didn't say the most amazing stuff just now.
Oh my God, it's classic banana.
It's, but come on, you've experienced that.
Totally. Yeah. And then you, look, I'm a stand-up comedian, and there's no fucking difference between being a stand-up comedian and, like, going to meetings. It's like they're the same kind of, first off, the same exact kind of people.
Well, the, very interesting. The same people.
The same people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so funny.
But if there is a difference, of course there's a difference.
Not really.
Really?
Not really. It's all, we're all searching for something. We're all trying to get better.
Yeah. But don't you go like, oh, wow, that will serve me throughout my day and not really have that experience in comedy?
I've had religious experiences watching stand-up comedy as well as in meetings.
What does that mean to an atheist?
That means having profoundly, I use that very loosely as in something that makes you feel one with the universe.
Right, right.
Feeling connected. And yeah. I think that's the juice, man. That's the stuff.
Right, right.
When you can feel connected to people and humanity.
Yeah.
And be okay.
Yeah.
You feel that feeling of being present.
Yeah.
And okay.
What else do you do to feel that way?
I perform. I write. I try to take time to, when I'm like losing myself in my bullshit and kind of like chasing that stuff in my head, I take time to go, just be present for a minute. You know, whether it's like tapping your own leg, letting you know I'm a person. This is me. This is me, the person. I'm here. I'm present. Stand up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you got to be in the moment.
You don't have to be. And right. That's really right. Bad when you're not.
Right.
When you start reciting stuff.
Right.
But when I'm creating, when I'm building stuff, whatever that is, when I'm working on a joke, when I'm helping people.
Right.
When you're doing something.
Right.
Good, you know. That's how I keep it together.
What, and speaking of performing, we have a weekly show here, a monthly show? You have a regular show.
Yeah,
are you
looking at it? I have a show at, it's twice a month. It's at the Improv. It's called the National Midnight Society.
Uh-huh.
And comedians come in and they try new or experimental material.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always fun. You get to see people who are great. Like Dimitri Martin will come in with his notepad and just try stuff for his new special. Anthony Jeselnik comes in a lot and tries new stuff. Maria Bamford comes in a lot. It's a good time and a fun thing if you like to watch the process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and watch your favorite comedians.
So is it the second? How
it's that bounces around. Friday, if you go to the Hollywood Improv's website, you can find.
Is it not on your site?
Dates. It is. You can also follow me on Twitter at Bill Dixonish, and I post about my shows all the time.
And your website, I feel like it's BillDixon.me.
Nope, BillDixonish.com.
Where did I get the .me? That's no. And oh, your email.
That's my email.
Yes.
Perfect. Just announced my email.
BillDixon.me is not going to get anybody anywhere.
No, that's very true. Bill_Dixon@me.com if you want to send me emails directly.
But seriously, why would that not be lovely? There would be people. You know what? Email him and tell him how much you liked him on this show.
Oh God, I'm so terrified.
Why not? And you also, you write for the television.
I write for television things. Hollywood Gay Night with Jane Lynch. The Will Wheaton Project on Sci-Fi Channel when it was on. And Celebrity Name Game with Craig Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
Currently.
And what network is that on?
Craig Ferguson things all over the place. CBS is in syndication.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Lynch is on NBC.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know nothing. Well, this pretty much, you know, wraps it up over here. You know, obviously we need to circle back to Madonna and peanut butter, but is there anything that you want to add, tell listeners, tell anybody about yourself?
I'm more of an almond butter kind of guy. I guess if you leave here with anything, said I'm just... almond butter, and I like bananas.
So that was Bill Dixon. This is After Party Pod. You can find us at iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever podcasts are not sold. And if you want a free copy of our ebook, How I Got Sober, all you got to do is email info@theafterpartygroup.com, and we will send you a link to that. Until next time, I'll see ya.